Hey, how are you doing? It's Ryland Walker Knight. It's Vinylist Podcast number 4. Here we are, me and Mark.
Hey.
We just got back from seeing Burn After Reading at the Cerrito Theater in El Cerrito. It was 2-for-1 Wednesday, and we enjoyed some yummy beer. I think we had some porter, and we had some pizza, and we saw this really hilarious movie.
Yeah, it was. I hadn't seen it yet. It was quite a while out, I guess. But I really enjoyed it. You, I know, this is your second viewing.
Yeah, so this was my second time. I think on the second podcast was the day I saw it the first time.
That's right.
Next and across the theater from Brian Darr. It's a nasty little thing. It's very angry, but also, I think, hilarious, and...
kind of like Barbara Stanwyck.
Yeah, and kind of, you know, moral in a way, like all their movies.
Like, yeah.
But it definitely is weird, you know?
I think the moralism isn't really pedantic either. I don't think the Coen brothers are talking down to us so much as just sort of saying, what the fuck, you
know? Yeah, but what's funny is I think the public reaction is that they do think they're being haughty or wise-assy or smart-alecky, you know? It's 'cause they are.
Yeah.
But, I mean... It's moral. It's not Paul Haggis, but it's an interest in morals as the only kind of resolution you can find in the kind of everyday crap that there is, and I think that's what...
Yeah, I mean, it's a very different kind of moral than Paul Haggis, because Paul Haggis's morals are pretty superficial morals that are based in sort of media politics, I think.
Like, yeah, no, I mean, he's PC and middle brow. To the end.
The Coen brothers don't really want to give equal voice to both sides because, and I think rightfully so, as much of a dick as this might make me sound, but I mean, some people don't really deserve as much of a voice as others. Not to say that it's like the intellectuals are, you know, of the film.
No, nobody.
Saving
nobody
graces,
comes
yeah.
off good.
Yeah,
you know,
never.
There's no real rooting interest, and the two characters, you do like if you do even care about, like the two most sympathetic characters. One is just like a complete loser who does a last act out of, you know, blind, stupid love, and the other one is just a doofus, but somehow they're the most sympathetic, and they meet their ends. I guess that's a spoiler if you haven't seen the movie. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the other thing that turns people off is that, you know, the two people you might develop some sympathy for are the ones who get the worst.
And one of them is, I mean, you can tell he's in love, but he really doesn't get that much screen time. They don't give him much.
No.
Like, like as much as you'd like to connect with him, and even though he meets his end at the very end of the film, they never allow that connection to form. I mean, it's not...
Well, like everybody, he's a caricature.
I mean,
it's a cartoon. Like, a lot of their movies are cartoons.
He's like the... he's like Pepe Le Pew or something. I don't know. I'm trying to think of some character who's constantly in love. But...
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not... I don't know cartoons that well. But... Because I didn't really watch TV as a kid, which is really weird. Like, I know you're amazed, and so are my other friends, that I just didn't watch The Simpsons.
Yeah, it's...
It's... But... It's,
oh, he's a Milhouse. There you go.
Okay. Yeah, he's a
Milhouse. He's sort of Milhouse in love with Lisa.
Yeah.
Anyways, side...
But yeah, I think The Simpsons play a part in this conversation.
Right, we were talking earlier about sort of like... forming a myth of America, or like sort of the way the Coen brothers very much they're sort of all about that creating some sort of their own America, I guess, or their portrait of America.
Yeah, I think their films are very much about witnessing America. I think if you go back a year or something on Vinyl is Heavy, there's a post right when No Country came out where I quote something from this Stanley Cavell book called Cities of Words. Which is sitting right there, and I could read to you from, but it'd probably be boring. So, Just go back and read it. It's about the inheritance of Sullivan's travels in O Brother, Where Art Thou? Because the chapter is about the Lady Eve. And it's really good. But he's talking about them as continuing that tradition of witnessing America. And I've stolen a lot of my argument and appreciation, maybe not stolen, but maybe inherited, my appreciation of the Coen brothers again from my friend Philippe and his wife Eileen, who really made me think about how all their movies are so situated in a certain place, and they're very much about the language of that certain place, that they sort of operate like late 19th century color novelists, like local color novelists.
Yeah, I mean, there's something really paranoid about the camera work, even before you know that there's really anything to be paranoid about, I feel like.
And the score. The score is just so dissonant and stupid, and like when the scene on the boat is like so overwrought, it's hilarious.
It's always sort of indicating something going on that we don't know. We don't really know what's going on, and that's at the end. It's sort of the question is like, how the hell did this all happen? And you're sort of just left with that feeling the entire movie, I think.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing about their picture of America is they aren't arguing for a chaos, you know. Like, I think it's pretty clear, you know, they aren't after that at all. That's why I think they're very moral filmmakers. That they see this absurdity, and like most of their, not in this film, but something like The Man Who Wasn't There or Miller's Crossing, the hero is this seemingly amoral character, or immoral, I don't know. But he sees the world as amoral, definitely, and he's just trying to make his own, I don't know, he's trying to cut his own space into it, that resounds and resolves as a kind of moral posture. I think they see the chaos, but they don't endorse it whatsoever. And I think that it comes off as snobbish sometimes, but it's also fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, at least in something like Burn After Reading, you know? Like,
I was pretty... I mean, I think this audience responded pretty well.
Yeah, well, I think they sort of got more into it as the film went on, just because it just builds and builds and builds. Mm-hmm. It's just like the cartoon aspect reaches this certain apogee with this shot of a helicopter. if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. It's when Linda takes on the paranoia of Harry, and it's like she realizes her being as a spectacle, but then you realize it isn't just paranoia that she actually was taken in. But this shot of the helicopter is just so fucking funny. And I think there's a guy on the little bar of the helicopter standing outside of the helicopter with binoculars looking down on her, down directly onto the camera. It's
pretty wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, In a way, here's my contrarian bit. I like this movie more than No Country. I think, I mean, if anything, it made me fucking laugh my ass off for 90 minutes. And walking out of No Country the first time, I was like, I want to go home. I don't want to go to that bar with you guys right now and drink and talk loud. But I did. Anyways, and I've grown to like No Country more and more, just because that movie's more explicitly about language than this one. This one, language is definitely a part of it. Like, it, as the guy says, you have a way with words. And it's very apparent. Yeah, the plastic surgeon.
Yeah. Being pretty sarcastic. But
yeah, like, but she hears it as a compliment. Of course. Because she's so...
One-track-minded.
Yeah. It's a monstrous kind of... I don't know. I guess that's it. Like, it's pretty easy to turn people off when you're asking the audience to laugh at these things, and they are like flesh and blood. You see her flesh being fondled by this doctor, not just marked up, but like you see it, her ass cheek getting pulled up. Like, you see that this person is flesh. It troubles that caricature cartoon thing. But, you know, then I get into my whole idea that, you know, it's all fake. Any film, even a documentary, is fake. So looking for that identification is kind of foolish in a way, I think.
I mean, at the same time, though, like, I think though we might not feel those desires as single-mindedly as Frances McDormand's character, they're definitely, like, there's something you can relate to because we all participate in America, you know?
Yeah, no, yeah.
It's, I don't know, there's something to the fact that we are participating in the creation of the myth, even the Coen brothers as they're making it. I mean, their two surrogates in the film are the two, like, top, well, at least the most senior,
yeah, that we see.
CIA agents that we see, and they're sort of
yeah,
befuddled by what's going on, but they're trying to patch it all together and smooth everything over so that chaos is deferred until another day, I guess, their yeah, next film.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's No Country's Dismal Tide made into not just dismal, but, you know, grotesque, not just a tide, a wave. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's...
But yeah. It's being kept at bay by these forces of what is accepted as just and what we're willing to accept as just if we don't have to think about it. And that, I think that's what is so, I don't know, scary in a way. And so black. Like, it is, like, as much as I'm laughing right now and as much as I laughed during that movie, it's a black comedy.
Oh, yeah.
It's gross.
It's really weird when you find yourself laughing at a man's skull being cracked open, I guess.
I mean, I'm mostly just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But the first time I saw it, after seeing it the first time, I thought that they cut it a lot sooner than they did.
Yeah, well, there's that, he has two blows at him, and the second one just...
Yeah, no, they have a little digital cut of his scalp. I mean, they do cut away from it. They do show a certain tenderness for, like, they don't show the other guy's face getting shot, really,
yeah.
They keep it off screen behind some jackets. I mean, I figure we can tell who, we can say Brad Pitt. You know?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I don't know why I'm trying to hide that. And Richard Jenkins is the guy who gets his head chopped into. And they're both great. I mean, Brad Pitt is hilarious, right?
Yeah, he's amazing. It's not that he can never not be charming. He's a lot like, his character's sort of like Floyd from the Tony Scott film that was written by Tarantino. I don't know why, I just forgot the
name.
Oh,
yeah. True Romance.
True Romance.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think he likes playing that role,
the
too,
goofy,
clearly.
Yeah. He's fucking good at it.
The weird thing about this one is, like, is Chad gay? I mean, that's another weird kind of negotiation there.
Yeah.
But it also doesn't really matter, you know? Like, it just matters that you can't see Chad actually fucking Linda. Like, there you got this weird little bond of just, like, working together, you make bonds with people, and you don't want to cross those.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, you're a sad sack, lapsed priest with a drinking problem.
Exactly.
Looking for some kind of tangible love. But...
Well, and I guess to go back to No Country, I mean, it's... In a lot of ways, it's sort of the same plot, or the same, like...
Yeah, it's basic almost the same movie.
Yeah, I mean, just transposed from Texas to D.C.
Yeah.
Or to Langley, I guess.
I mean, there's a lot of similarities in tone and spirit. And, I mean, not in tone, but in spirit and thematic, like, apocalyptic crap.
Right, and just, like, what do you do when you find something that's not yours that's potentially valuable?
Yeah, but then again, that theme is... That's just... They're just making the same movie over and over.
Oh, yeah,
and
it's very true.
When I saw the trailer for Burn After Reading, which, you know, completely sells a different movie than the one you get in the theater. When I first saw that trailer, I was like, oh, it's Blood Simple but funny. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's funny, but it's not Blood Simple but funny. Mm-hmm. It's more closely related. And, you know, No Country is almost a remake of Blood Simple. I mean, they're always about these objects that people think are going to fulfill them, but they don't.
Right.
Because the chaos of the world denies resolutions and narratives that people want to fulfill themselves. I mean, Linda goes to the movies to try and use the movies as a barometer for who she wants to be with, and which we all do. Or, I don't know, not all of us, maybe, but I do, I guess.
We too. We're the only ones in the room right now, so we
all our multitudes do.
Well, it's true, too, that, I mean, like, the objects that they find to always force them into interacting with the world, which means that they get woven into these connections. I mean, a lot of these people are never really going to get involved in the world. They're just going to sort of... I mean, Linda would continue to just troll the internet, meet a guy, have sex, and then find another guy. That's not, she would never really, like, involve herself in anything, I feel like.
Oh, yeah, like we were talking about earlier, the characters are nihilistic, but the film is not.
Yeah.
The film seems so grounded in everyday crap, you know? Like, I mean, then it gets blown out of proportion, of course. It's a cartoon. But it just seems, I mean, it starts with just zooming in on feet. Like, this is about as basic as it gets, you know? Like, it's zooming into how we are moving in the world. I don't know, almost didactic. I mean, it's a joke. It's like everything else. It's a joke. I think Manolo Dargis, like, kind of derided it as a Google map of America that gets zoomed in on. And I think that's the point, you know? Yeah. Like, duh. And I love Manola Dargis. I think she's an amazing writer, but I really think the Coen brothers people just shouldn't review their movies at first or something. I don't know. They just get so...
Or just see their films at the speakeasy.
Yeah, just drink some beer and hang out. I mean, hard to do that with No Country. That movie wants to, you know, deny you a lot of things, like happiness.
At the same time that it really wants to involve you, though.
It's telling you to just, you know, make a choice to be a part of the world. That's what I came to realize about that movie. That movie isn't nihilistic either. That movie is about affirming that we live in this world, you know, like, and there's only one, you know, you either participate or you don't. And I mean, also, the great other thing about that is that the final speech there at the end of that movie is the same as the book, and it is, that speech is the next book that he wrote. I mean, and The Road is clearly, it's such a pure book. That's my favorite of the McCarthy I've read. I wasn't really a fan of McCarthy until I read that, but that's besides the point. The Coen brothers are
pretty great.
Yeah. But I understand that there's also this, like, resistance to being one of those kind of people who likes the Coen brothers, you know? Because they're easy to like in a facile way, too. Like, it's easy to like Big Lebowski because it's about a stoner.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more. And that movie is just amazing.
I mean, formally, too, they're always so on point with just every move is...
Yeah.
Is engaging and thought-provoking, I feel like. Especially in The Big Lebowski, it's... As much as it's about, you know, just this sort of, like, lazy guy, it's so... It feels so precise.
Yeah. No, and that's the great thing about this movie, too. Burn After Reading is just so brisk. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing wasted. I think I heard some interview with them, or read some interview with them, where they got mad at the guy who did the credits for No Country, because that meant that they had made their first movie over 120 minutes, because the credits made it 123 minutes. Because before that, they, I mean, this movie's only like 92 or something, right? I mean, they're about, you know, enjoying life as much as there's crap. And I'm into that.
As much as you can point and laugh at it, you can still
you can
still point and laugh at it.
Yeah,
you know?
And I mean, they don't deny empathy. I mean, I think that they definitely love a lot of their characters in a way. I think they love. I don't know if they love anybody in this movie.
Maybe Brad Pitt, because he gets so much time to dance and just sort of be a
Oh,
goof,
yeah, I
and
think they do like his
that's pretty lovable.
immediacy. I mean, what does he say in the hallway there? He's just dancing down the hallway and he's like, holy shit! It's great. Yeah, they might love him. And I think they love the sex toy. I mean,
That's pretty
it's
amazing,
pretty
too.
hilarious. And in a way, you can tell they sort of sympathize with Malkovich's speech about, like, you know what,
You're all
fucking
fucking idiots.
idiots, just get out of my way. And I think that's probably where the resistance comes in, too. It's just like, I mean, it's clear they're smart guys and they're funny, and there is a certain anti-intellectualism that will always resist, smart Alex. But there's no way to argue against that. I'm not trying to do that. You know what? If it doesn't turn you on, fine, that's cool. But we don't need to get in a fight about it. So, at least that's how I feel. That's the problem with so much of film criticism. You know, it gets taken as an opportunity for like a clever little pithy little thing when all that really is just like a ego trip. It isn't really about your experience as much as just like, check this out. I don't know. And me saying that is just, some smart alecky thing to say too. So
Take it or leave it.
yeah, I guess so.